about what is, what do we ask. And then we look into how we use the dialects, and then they will delve into not if something that could be okay into with more ancient Russian dialects. And then also we'll also look into what are some things that we have planned in the project to improve this further. And we are newly getting passion projects, so we're super excited to be here and also share, we want to also share more of the project and so that how we are doing and things like that. Alright, so let me try and push it. So pretty at a very high level, let's see how we just the external streams of data, data change logs, how you know from the other ETL, how you jobs. And then managing also the asset that is stored directly on top of the DBS are all stored are sort of DBS compatible APIs. And then it provides you three sort of views of this data for various use cases. So it provides you an incremental change streams. So this you can think of this as like a view log of your data set. It contains all the changes, the data changes that have happened to your data set. And then it provides two views which are more for snapshot queries. So internally we manage data as columnar and row-based formats, and so we have a view called a read optimization view, which is purely columnar and it's used for sort of your model, parquet, table, or you use it for. And then in some cases we have the need for actually having more viewing on the precious data. So you also provide a combined like merged view of columnar and row-based data in the right hand view. So all in all, people typically like start high work spark details using the incremental change streams and then come joining with the other one or other the two views. And also you typically see dashboards and notebooks directly querying Snapshot views as well. Alright. So you can ask me or share here, hopefully give you good reasons. So first, you can build a new data integration to cloud storage and DFS, kind of related to how you are interesting probably batch data set today. And if you are having batch jobs or taking large amount of time, then you could consider like incorporating some of the upsets or incremental primitives to sort of speed them up. If you really like stream processing jobs and how you offer them, the good thing is Hui actually brings this kind of style of jobs that you can write on batch data as well, where you consume only incremental input and you incrementally update your states in a destination table. And the Hui camera like, sits in between the whole batch and stream world, so it also gives you some sort of unified analytical storage as some of, like, as some of your requirements on that. And it also optimizes the data that you store inside the V in terms of laying out the data, sizing files, and things like that. If you tell the things like GDPR regulations, so we get to mutate data, so you can use it to kind of implement release and carry these regulatory processes. And then, overall, it's a great building block for Rails, and as you can see, we distill these down from the practical experience that we might use on. Alright, so I will quit marketing, but there are some technical aspects that led to the actual value extension. So it has upsets about sort of fast and global indexing, and it helps you automatically publish data with global support. It uses snapshot resolution between your readers and writers. It will retain these snapshots for a considerable amount of time. So you can skip queries as a given snapshot on the data for repeatable debugging and things like that. And we also support these on one storage type, sort of the save point feature that you can get more and more effective snapshots. If you're familiar with them, you can say, okay, this point in time in the data set I want to be able to recover back to in case anything goes wrong, so we support that. So, like I mentioned, manage file sizes using a bunch of running statistics and ingest in row-based data and has an asynchronous compaction process to kind of slowly ease that into column data. And email, all of this is accomplished by having some time and the data to track the lineage and the operations that whatever is going on with the data set. Zooming in that, distilling it down to the core idea. So you have a 3 data set. You have a bunch of vectors which can be inserts or partial updates with the vectors that are stored in this data set. We let you do an upsert of these records at time D. Then a snapshot query executing at time D will see the latest committed value for each record in the data set. Additionally, you can say, using incremental pull APIs, you can say, okay, incrementally pull records from time D minus 1 to D, and you get all the records that are needed to change for inserted in the data set from between these times. If you want to understand more code details of how all this is made out, so on DFS, this is like a single partition. So the data managed in Hudi is kind of grouped into 5 groups. So you see 4 groups, 1, 2, 3, 4. Within each group, there are sort of row-based files, such as columnar. So the big rectangles, all the green colored ones, are all parquet files, portions of parquet files. And each log that's spaced to this file is essentially a log containing all the changes that have happened to this particular version of a parquet file. And there is a bunch of timeline for the data that we're tracking. So in terms of time, or simply skip to how the query, reopening query at say time 10:10 is going to be executed on this snapshot of the storage. So like I mentioned, this is going to only consider column data. And essentially what it does is it comes in, picks up the 3 parquet files, the latest parquet files in each file group that are committed before. So it reads, needs to be files in green. Reading query comes in, it essentially will read both the latest log and latest parquet data, but also sort of merge on the fly the parquet and the log data to read the latest value of each of those stored. And then internal query is essentially going to either go to the log or the parquet and from simply get the records that were written greater than or equal to this time. So, in short, this is how we kind of provide these three views of the data. And with that, now, should we just write your name as that? Specifically, here it is. And let's actually take a turn to the schema. Okay, overall, at the last, it seems like it's a problem. Probably have some microservices, implementing events, storing data and data access, some external CRM store, CRM data, whatever the data, whatever, some external sources. You want to just detail them, as they say, into a bunch of tables on top of the JFS across storage and the file that can be. But even with a simple thing, there's a lot of tables in the data here. We are writing transforms directly in sources and that has a bunch of problems. So, if you try to scale this to thousands of videos or even hundreds of videos, you would have to figure out some way of avoiding to without overloading your database. So databases don't like large scans. For example, so if you scan for MySQL with thousands, hundreds and hundreds, five jobs probably will lock up and die. And then also, if you want to change your VDL now, the transformation logic changes, then how do you backfill it? Right, same problem, right? You have to drop the VDL in some source store. Under the new architecture, VDLs, like how do you measure data quality? You're going directly from this sort of physical data. It gives you a very little chance to standardize the data model or say a piece of standard timestamp fields, things like that. And both on, not having raw data because you're only picking and choosing some fields and some platform version of the data, you cannot effectively do sort of ML and data science, which often requires raw data to be able to engineer the features for you to actually do something useful with them. So people typically embrace a data lake architecture, as with many things in computer science, one level of interaction by COLAC, plus you throw in some schemas and data like. But very high level, you first just ingest the data in the raw. So the raw tables are kind of like replicas of your upstream data sources. Then you write your ETLs on top of these raw tables as a proxy for the data sources as opposed to writing on them directly. This, as you can see, like all of the data governance auditing standardization can happen at the log table level, and then all the details can now scale because this is stored in something like SD or TFS, and you can kind of start a job and backfill quickly, and I'm pretty sure you all have done this kind of stuff. Alright, a few years ago, I was a similar question to the sale of nature, but in fact, I truly believe that, oh yeah, this is like the foundation. And I thought I'd be like, I'd be able to build this maybe in 6 months and move on to, like, say, more cooler stuff. But I think even building one scale took a long time. So, you have to practically integrate a dozen pieces of software, and also build some custom pieces here and there. So, typically, you would, as much as possible, get change logs from your databases, pump them onto something like Kafka. And then you also have your new machines and Kafka flowing. And then in cases that it's not possible, you use a tool like Scoop, which gives you kind of like a best effort incremental data from a data set. And then you need something on the other side to take kind of these updates. These are like data exchange logs or changes to the take upstream table. So we take something like Hbase, which is closer to HDFS, which has the same storage as HDFS. And then there's five jobs to dump these log tables, like every few hours or something like that. And then you build your details on top, and then you can, right? But even after integrating these dozen pieces of software, it's still slow and efficient. And if you notice, most of the world is streaming data moving very quickly until it got headaches. Because at this, till that point, you could do sort of like streaming set operations that either get an event and then you are updating something that you saw and then you're keeping state. The minute you get into writing stuff and managing things on DFS, things go into these big back jobs, which take up a lot of time. And here, I think, you can see, there's a 120 FPS table we used in just UAS because I think people said it was very simple to do that. But the actual big change in this data set is only 50 GB. It's all about not having the smarts to do it incrementally. And all these years and fully compute their state because they have no clue as to what changes either. And then talk about data and data, you don't know when you start to review state, so I'm not seeing data more than 6 days in chain or whatever, and then you always interpret data for the smarts. So there's also a bunch of other like small thread problems, how do you like size them properly, but you also need to keep them fresh. How do you, so like what are bad batch, how do you do that, how do you prevent the queries from not seeing this bad records, and even you say bad data got through, maybe that particular field wasn't queried for a few hours, and a lot of the batches have been ingested, now what do you do, like when you hit a problem, how do you restore the data, and how do you avoid duplicates in the data set? So if you someone wanted to most possible credit card transactions and they don't want duplicates, how do you do that? Like, there's none of these kind of guarantees are available on top of TTP when you do this thing. So I mean a lot of ideas are thrown out. We were like, they're all really cool bad or worse. Things like data is really interface completely, but I mean interface has purpose, right? And the columnar, like in a data, the columnar queries are not one of the what you want to face. And you can ignore updates to data, and this is like, I guess, inspired by the offset algorithm data injection that you pretend that the data isn't there. But I mean, even if you have free data, the updates will be there, they don't go away. And then, why not only support logs? The whole thing is you're trying to kind of like deal with people, so just log everything. But you end up with everyone trying to kind of compact this log in their own way, and then no one can at least read and say the numbers to each other, it's a much bigger problem. Yeah, I mean, essentially, don't really keep everything, maybe data knowledge credits, none of them really work. So, essentially, this is basically what I like to kind of the pre project, and there's some key design principles that we took away from all this, which is okay, let's try to move away from big batches as much as possible, like you do it and it's very complex to incrementalize something, but otherwise, let's try to do things in incremental fashion as much as possible. And let's try to think about this as a database problem. paying close consideration to the fact that this is usually 10 to 100x more scaling than what you have in your data space. And then also provide different apps or different trade-offs. Like some people want pressure data, some people want, the ML things are probably only on demand, like a part of the column that are data because it's way more efficient to do that. But for some dashboards, the business rather pay the extra cost of the raw data than have a pressure data. So we want to design something with all these apps and not have just the one way of doing it. With that, I'm going to have to Balaji to talk you through the.
This way of incrementally observing the speed is going to be very efficient compared to analyze large-scale and data and this stuff. These rules are really like the two formal and technically dependent to the database. So because of the nature of these events, like, there could be implications of this log stream. It could be because of the failure replay handling on the client side, or because of the additional handling of the database. And so duplicates in the log stream, if not created well, will result in a correctness problem on any analysis that are being done on these assets. So it becomes essentially important to review any duplication of the log. And so here's an example in the log example here, the table called event stream, which event ID is the primary key and the page stream and other XOR payload. And in order to basically, with the actual root indexing, we can actually view event streams at scale. Root indexing, you know, basically is a tool that we use here. It provides the ability to view incoming reports. Basically passing some context. And then you basically use a tool index to determine if the records in the incoming batch are duplicates or not. So what we have found is that the indexing to be like, much better performing example than and faster than using any record key joins of between the incoming data set and the data set you want to store the copy to. So basically this is how we actually get an efficient data. And now that we have seen how to ingest data, let's focus on how to manage this storage at scale. Small files are really a big problem. They cause overhead to query engines and stress on some data. We're not writing the larger files, right? So if you want to write larger files, then it would cause engine delays. So a common strategy is to basically, let's start writing small files, and later come back and merge these small files. But there isn't any standardization around this. In some cases, it's a non-atomic operation, which can cause some consistency issues from the data perspective. Also, since we are writing small files anyway, the query performance is going to be bad till we actually merge these files. And by designing only cache-aware files, we can well-sized files up to the configured maximum. But if you want to ingest quickly, you can. So if you want to ingest quickly, you can use a merge-on-demand approach, which will decouple ingestion and compaction, and ingestion will append new records or write to log files, smaller files, but then the background compaction is going to come in and it's going to merge these smaller log files to larger log files. And also one of these side effects of file switching is that it would mess up the data clustering of the files. So fully on the other hand, erase up the data on arrival order consistently. So this kind of helps with the common queries that you actually query by timestamp, the time order. And those queries are fully able to prove files much better, and that will actually in turn for have much better query performance. Okay, so then historically data analytics have been shortly around supporting transaction view of data. But this is changing with more and more and so we need to have a mechanism to automatically publish a batch of data. And when we validate data, should be saved. Any partial for failures must be rolled back in a transparent manner. And queries needs to be repeatable and not see any partially ingested data. And any committed data must be related. So, who brings transaction into large scale data? In fact, we have not quite similar approaches in other projects as well. So Hudi supports multi-role, multi-partition promising. So Hudi reads a special folder where actions, we don't have to be increasing actions are recovered. And Hudi uses this folder to kind of promptly expose a committed action. And any partial failures are rolled back transparently and they do not affect leaders at any point in time. And Hudi uses a multi-ocean concurrency model so that any mutations that are seen on the file results in creating a new file version so that any concurrency running queries can still work off of the older version of the file and get a consistent snapshot. So and we see a fully commit protocol and the DFS story can use and also choose that it has committed as new. Okay, so another requirement is it's not just sufficient to only have registered data quickly. You also need to be the ability to compute the right data. Without this, data engineers often bypass the raw tables to build the right details. And end up getting the whole application. So in this example, we see an raw payment table where the currency is not standardized and the derived payload just built off of this raw table with currency generation. So so these are like, pretty common multi-stage pipelines we see in the data rate. And it has typically the tables are large amounts of data and derived tables will want to be in sync with the changes that are happening on the body. So there are challenges in scaling such pipelines. Many full scale reprocessing of the base raw data is not always going to be possible and it's going to be based on computer resources. So you need abstraction at the data level to support intelligent recomputation on only on chain flows on the so, Hudi provides these incremental processing parameters that lets you write batch detailed jobs the same way you would write a stream processing job. So, for performing the previous detailed operation that we saw on the previous slide, simply I would, let's say, tap on to the incremental view of the Hudi and construct a Spark dataset of the raw payment table. You can then apply custom transformation on these the incremental change and like you convert here for example you convert the currency into some standard denomination and then upsell the efficient parameters to the derived data set. As you can see this opens up a powerful streaming type incremental processing. This is going to be all of magnitude faster than doing full reprocessing of the raw table. And it is going to avoid creating the whole data. Okay, so any data implementation also has to handle bottlenecks in communicating with the underlying data server also. One of the common operations that we see in English or query is about existing folders, which today is around time. And so this can be done in a single threaded or in multi threaded fashion. There is a trade off where you go single threaded, it could become a bottleneck in itself. Sorry, it could become a bottleneck for the query and the NC itself. But going full blown can if you want to do this at scale, can own the underlying storage. Also, there are subtle differences in the way cloud storage provides the Hadoop system semantics. One is some examples are like cloud storage do not have upfront and SQL is eventually consistent and premium is actually going to copy enemy and there are no problems with having directories with too many files. And there's been a common strategy for some companies to not get Docker to one cloud offering, In some cases, because we don't have for data lake to handle PC sensors, and we cannot provide seamless analogy experience across the different cloud offerings. So, like I said, for me, Kubernetes is a delicate balance between the need for parallelism and minimizing DFS systems. So, fully kind of caches this file system view on the application side, user driver, and provides RPC endpoints so that the unit class running on the executor side doesn't have to actually do file system on their own. They can just query this cache and get the file system state. And this cache can be incrementally seamless so that you end up with like one or two file system calls, and then basically not have to go back to the system to read more files. And we also have the consistency parts for supporting database built on top of S3. So fully performed efficiency, we go to great lengths to avoid doing the electric engineers and enforce the in-place security. And we are aware of what sort of append capacity, like what storage has append capacity, and kind of use whenever some storage supports append, we take advantage of that, otherwise we just take a lot of that. And failure handling mechanism is also an issue. It's not like it's actually an optimistically evidence that it will not write through some kind of files and do file reading errors. It will follow the technical design that we cannot first write and then clean up those duplicate files as part of the control. Okay, so in recent years with new data protection regulations coming into effect, there are strict rules for data retention. So it was actually data not only on the raw tables but also on the direct tables in the data lake. And so what we need is efficient direct semantics. We need close to pointer shortcuts on these for these arrays. The same kind of data is actually optimal for scans. And we need to have to create these selected across seamless CPU options. So, Kubi makes finding the dedicated rows and effectively removing the dynamic availability experience. Kubi basically uses an index which is secret source for figuring out where the records are present, and quickly figuring out the files where the records are present and performing the registry. So Kubi supports both soft and hard arrays. The soft arrays you need to pass a null payload and we make sure that this soft array will be available for incremental code so that they can be seamlessly propagated to downstream tables. For hard arrays, you can such a record payload configuration and the compacted payload from any index of the record from the data set. So I'm getting across the various indexing part, which is way more performant than doing regular joins to find out where the records are. So now that we are getting the requirements and how we can start it, now let's look at the future. So we just getting started, and as a community, we can build a much better version. Let's see how that future is like. So the first mission is about supporting smarter storage layouts. So the idea is basically intelligently clustered records, which would be optimal for certain programs. The one idea would be to basically have multiple manipulation of this device in a different clustering of this device. Each one suitable for one of the aspirin partners. And the advantage would be that the queries become faster, and then we use a similar approach to basically figure out the use to look at the file mutation metadata, to figure out which files can be merged asynchronously, and that can result in much more better, larger files and more better file systems. We identified about the chromosome ideas on this. Since software is basically you want and like do it in the same way as you run some action, so that like it doesn't have to be like a swap of other exercises. Like compaction can happen, this recursion can happen at the same time. The total problem creates solvers. So the next feature is to basically build a database that has multiple next data sessions. One problem actually is basically we can be a disabled command for each stream mean or real time data source. So we let's say you need to figure out the data, since we have only using your real time data source, then you can easily come back and do mean or ad hoc analysis on the data sets that are stored in your database. And earlier again, now with 1 to 2 million data sessions, you can also kind of use data value for your dashboard or some business intelligence use case. I mean, there are a bunch of things that we figured that we need to do this in order to get into the session. It was also on improving the log indexing performance and tuning some configurations to suit low latency data injection, and also improving on deployment tooling around home action. So then we also want to kind of standardize our community database across different data lake environments. One use case on currently it would be supposed to be. But there are a lot of data sets that are using ORC, Hadoop, and other formats. And we want to actually make sure that we can support these formats. And we have with processing frameworks, as in this room, basically. Currently, Hadoop is a Spark library, but it's an active wide interest in the community to support Flink as a processing unit. And so there are some. And the next one is basically so data might have more granular metadata. We need to figure out a way of exposing this data to query engines in order to improve the query performance. So one of the ideas we see it. So Hudi has keeps track of some variable metadata. They're using this for price sizing, but you can basically have much more richer data column sizes and other sizes you can try for improving not only the price storage but also improving the performance. And again we got the two parts of it one I said improving the try the syntax of the query planning information and also to expose the additional metadata so that you can help it. Okay, so another common question that we get is this is fine, how do I get full data from my existing data set? So, one of these videos is the speed of the existing data and various group areas. But that may be much more involved exercise. So we want a much more like an painless and easy migration of existing data sets. The idea is to basically have good enough and lazy bootstrap where only the partition actually sees some computations. We end up bootstrapping that particular partition. But in general, we wanted to, for subsequent partition, we just want to move forward and just only use the default. So this way, it's going to be it can be a better of both worlds that you can start using Hudi for the existing newer set of partitions. At the same time, you can you don't have to pay the cost upfront to migrate. And with that, actually, I'm going to
thank you, Raj. So as we mentioned, we are in class in the Python Builder, and let's look at a few things about the project and what it's doing. Okay, so before that, in the brief timeline of the project, I think there's a core idea for this. We started cooking, you know, both of those things earlier. We're starting with all these problems that I mentioned before, with not being able to release in incrementally. So we put out this story article about, hey, we should want to do incrementally, and I can hear a lot of people saying it. Building the first version of this that we were powering all the data that you can see. So this is something we kind of put there, and also generally thought it might be like put it out there and see what the community needs. And we started working on things like Mozambique cloud support, and then maybe we took out our offers, people from the Troyas, like a more general thing to have in the portfolio, because like, you know, all the dozen projects, most of them are Apache projects, so thought it would be good to bring it back into the Apache code, and then we integrated it this year, and we're working towards our first release. We have various of community members from all these work, all these companies, and we have members from like, these companies, and then we I mean, the user production by few companies actually work, and a lot of companies are in testing evaluation, and honestly, a lot of the pieces is because we need a better app story at this point. But still, we seem like a really healthy growth. This is a project that's a very challenging and interesting technical roadmap, and it's solving like a very general purpose problem for the community. So we are seeing solid sort of like, you know, if any of this interests you at all, come check us out, and we have to have more of those computers with more ideas for us. And yeah, we collaborate in the Apache way, and we have HIPS, you know, like the top of the Kafka process. And then we use people like filing public works on areas, and ask people really like to file issues on GitHub. And then we actually use Jira for management, use of PRs. These are some of the resources. Jira Docs live on site. It's a technical review page which we are actively improving. It's also needs some computers. Twitter is joining the mailing list. And there's also a Slack because there's like a bunch of companies who aren't really comfortable saying they're using it, and then they also want to have more one-on-one conversations about the industry data centers and stuff. So I think those kind of one-on-one things, how different things happen for it. But anything in addition, obviously, is something open up, I guess. And big picture, this is like the last thing that I would say is we firmly believe this also is very clear why and how we just store and process data. It's like a very general thing. And we designed this project as something that leads the convergence towards the same style of processing. If you think about it, more and more, I think, doing a lot more things in that sort of incremental. I keep saying incremental theory to not confuse people with thinking that this is a shame job. This is a shame study job in terms of that data. But if you want to have that kind of processing portfolio, and I think that's a very efficient. It brings some transaction semantics into data, and it's actually pushing pretty well to start off, try to solve for scale speed right on top of storage, like cloud source, and I think that's the industry, the big companies can actually scale their own kind of storage across database and database. So kind of, I feel the project is pushing well to look at all the impending demand, and our goals here are to evolve since our de facto open and like in a vendor neutral format for storing and managing data, because this is like often people's core data sets on the company that is this data isn't really in there. So it'd be good to have like a project which can manage this data in a very open way. So that's kind of what we're supposed to be doing, actually spending a lot of time with the community and the project. And yeah, pretty much it. Any questions? That's over here.
So the incremental incremental downstream computation, I think the data is the only gated thing.
Yeah. to be the person and the person who asks, what do you get in the input pool? So you get complete images of the latest value of the table. So for example, if you have a table that stored all the trips that happened in a day, and then you said, okay, give me trips that happened at 8 a.m., it's going to give you going back to our example, T minus 1 and D, you're going to get like a whole bunch of full trip rows, which can either be updated or new trips. And then it's going to have some comment engine which tells you when it was last updated.
So the consumer should know timestamps. So it's not like it's reading the one article.
So series and RDBMS, you need to know that the SCN or the row position to pull from. Or if you're pulling from a Kafka W, you need to know the offset that you're pulling from. So the consumer needs to pass the start offset for which you want changes from, and then you can all the data.
Previous and next
value. Yeah. Right now we don't give previous, we only give the latest value. Alright, thank you for ending the talk.